The chair opens the public hearing for House Bill 1018. Any proponents, if they would please come forward. And I would bet you have signed in.
Yes.
Thank you. Would you introduce yourself? Thank you.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Forsch. I'm with the Department of Health. And what Tom Martinez is passing out is a Q&A question and answer regarding this bill. Might help to answer some questions you have that maybe I haven't answered or that you might want to take down on the floor, assuming the bill passes or gets that far. Okay. House Bill 1018 is, again, a bill that's brought to you on behalf of the Department of Health and really on behalf of rural communities in our state. The purpose of the bill, as you can see, it's a rather short bill. The purpose of the bill is really to expedite the processing of paperwork and forms that's currently done by the federal government. There's a series of federal agencies that deal with a foreign physician wanting to stay in this country beyond their J-1 visa period. You have the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which processes the applications, the Department of State, or the state U.S. State Department, that pretty much sets out the criteria and the guidelines and establishes all the forms and the procedures. Then you have the U.S. Immigration Department that gives the final approval to the waiver of the visa. What typically happens when a foreign physician chooses to apply for a waiver to stay in this state is they go through the process, and once their application is completed, if they found a rural community that's willing to, has a match, and meaning there's an opening for a physician there, and they apply for that waiver and fill out the paperwork, it may take anywhere from 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 months to complete that process. A lot of times that physician has either found another opportunity or may have to go back to their homeland because the paperwork has taken that long. And in South Dakota, we have some real life situations, if you will, of communities that have historically have a difficult time trying to recruit a physician. And that's one of the criteria, again, in this J-1 visa process, is that community has to apply for, or excuse me, has to have proven that they've advertised on a regular basis with no opportunity for any U.S. physicians to be employed in that community. Maybe to give you just a little more background on what a J-1 visa doctor is, I kind of got ahead of myself for a little bit. Basically, you have a foreign physician that applies to this country with a J-1 visa waiver to continue their medical education. That's a temporary visa, good for up to about 7 years. After that time, it's required that they return back to their homeland unless, and here's where the waiver comes in, there's like 3 or 4 exceptions. One, if they return home and they may face certain persecution or other things, then that can be granted, the waiver can be granted. A second opportunity would be if a federal agency chooses to sponsor that foreign physician to stay in this country. And a third and now more popular, and probably the most popular way to waive that foreign physician having to go back to their homeland is that a state department of health or public health agency sponsors that individual. And what we mean by sponsorship is basically that you process that application, that foreign physician has found a match in that state, the state department of health processes that application and therefore sends that whole paperwork along with a recommendation to accept the waiver to the federal agency, the State Department of Health and the federal State Department. There's a lot of agencies here, and the U.S. Immigration with a recommendation to stay. It's a long, even though the state's going to take over this process, we hope to expedite the actual review of the paperwork. And we think we can do that from the time we get a completed application and all the forms in. We think we can do that in a couple of weeks, in contrast to several months that the federal agency the time it takes to process this. But the actual forms and so forth don't change that much. And as you could imagine, with a foreign immigrant, there's a lot of things that have to be met. They would have to be eligible for state licensure by the Board of Medical Examiners, so there's no bypass of that system here. They would have to meet the residency requirements of the state board. They'd have to make sure they're in good standing. If they had worked in their previous 7 years while they were here on a visa, they'd have to make sure that if they were in another state besides the state they're now wanting to settle in, that would all have to be in good standing and so forth. Like I said, there would have to be letters of recommendation from both the hospital or the clinic that intends to employ this physician, other physicians or communities that this individual's worked in. There would have to be proof that that community and hospital or clinic that are trying to hire this physician, let's say in Philip, has been unsuccessful in trying to employ a U.S. physician, if you will, for some time. And they would have to prove that through proof of advertising. And in this state, the Office of Rural Health has a really good handle on that. We know of almost every practice opportunity in this state for family practice in rural areas. Another major criteria is that the foreign physician has to practice in a medically underserved area, which in our state is basically all of the rural facilities. All of the rural communities. Communities that wouldn't be eligible would be communities like Sioux Falls, Rapid City, and a few of the other larger ESD facilities are towns like Aberdeen and Watertown. Again, I don't want to make this more complicated than it is, and again, I guess I would just close in saying that what we're trying to do here is make it more easy for the communities to work with us. I think one of the only ways that we have right now to try to move that application through, if it sits on the bottom of the pile, if you will, on a desk of really one individual for the whole country that processes these at USDA, is to use our congressional folks. And we have, and so have communities, and even then, that's gotten very difficult to try to continue to go to that well to try to move an application from the bottom of the pile to the top. I do have two letters of support from communities that have actually went through this process in the last 6 months, Philip and Martin, and there's several other communities in our state in the last year that have used this process, Redfield, Westington Springs, and DeSmet, all successfully receiving a foreign physician. But again, as you'll see, and I'll just pass the letters around, it's taken months and months, and in one case almost lost the physician because it had taken so long. With that, Madam Chairman, I can answer questions now or wait till
I think
after
we'll
the
probably wait until all of the proponents have testified, but probably stay close.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any more proponents for House Bill 1018?
Madam Chairman, Dean Krogman, I represent South Dakota State Medical Association. We've been assured that all the licensing that occurs for physicians in South Dakota would still occur under the licensing board, the Board of Medical Examiners. And considering the fact that I believe there are still 14 counties that do not have doctors in our state, that we look at this as being another opportunity to help that situation out. And the fact is that they cannot compete in those larger areas. We do have the med school, obviously, and we want to make sure those doctors, if they choose, have a place to stay. But this is an opportunity to help out in certain areas, and we do support that.
Thank you. Any more proponents?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Terry Dash. This morning I'm representing the Association of Community Healthcare. The Association of Community Healthcare is an associational group which represents a type of clinic called a community health center. In South Dakota, there are six of these community health center systems representing 17 services delivery sites. What makes them unique is, first of all, they're federally qualified. Secondly, they qualify because of that certification for federal assistance through the Bureau of Primary Health Care. The funds that come in are important from the standpoint of creating infrastructure for primary health care delivery, and also to help subsidize fee schedules for providing services to the indigent and the homeless. Examples of some of the sites I represent are Sioux River Valley Community Health Center in Sioux Falls. That's an example where we have a situation in an urban area, and their primary mission in that community is to serve the indigent population in Sioux Falls and to make sure that they have access to family practice type medical services. Other community health centers in the state are more discreet, and not necessarily known to the people that they serve that they're a community health center at all, because they're situated in some of the more rural aspects of the state, such as the clinic in Isabel, South Dakota, the clinic in Elk Point, South Dakota, the clinic that's in Oneida, South Dakota. And prospectively, the association has been working with the community of Martin to establish a community health center there. Clearly, we are about providing services, assuring the availability of basic essential health care, and making that accessible, especially in the most rural aspects of South Dakota. Simply stated, now that you know a little bit about us and what our mission is, we support this legislation. We feel it's very important for communities to have the choice on whether or not a J-1 visa medical graduate will work for them in terms of the continuity of care in their community. And since we're community-based, we'd like to have them have that option. We support this bill.
Thank you. Any more proponents? We would open up then to any questions from the committee of the proponents. Representative Van Etten.
I have a question, question for Kevin. The city makes the application, is that correct?
It can happen a couple of ways, Representative Van Etten. It can be the city or on behalf of the hospital. If the hospital, we'll make sure that the rural communities and the hospitals typically are the ones that have applied, have the forms, and they can apply on behalf of a foreign physician.
But
it's usually a joint effort.
But the foreign physician can't make the request himself?
They can. Already have some of that paperwork done, especially some of the forms that they have to fill out, but the majority of the information is about the site itself. So it's again, it's almost a three-way partnership between the physician, the community, and probably the hospital or the clinic, all pulling the information together, getting it all into a pack, and then of course we'll provide a lot of technical assistance because some of the forms are rather complicated, and then that'll come into us.
I ask one more question.
Certainly, Representative.
What happens if he stops practicing in that health professional shortage area? Then how long does the visa last, or what happens to it?
Okay. They have, there also has to be, in terms of part of the application process, a three-year obligation and a commitment. Now, I don't know, what you're saying is basically if the waiver is granted by U.S. Immigration and after year one they leave and they haven't fulfilled their obligation, so to speak, of 3 years, are they free to just go about within the U.S.? I don't have that answer, but if I may, Madam Chair, I have a staff person here that's a lot more familiar in detail with this program. Bernie Osberg is the director of our Office of Rural Health. May I defer that to him?
Certainly. Maybe he could just come forward to speak into the mic since, we are on the Internet. Again, would you introduce yourself as well?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Bernie Osberg with the Office of Rural Health. I think Kevin pretty much answered that question. If they do have a three-year obligation, and if the physician were to leave, let's say in year one or year two, then the waiver of their J-1 visa would be revoked. So it's a pretty simple answer.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Davis.
If they fulfill their obligation, are they then citizens?
It's a rather lengthy process that the international medical graduate would have to go through, and it's not citizenship is not awarded upon the end of that 3-year period. They still have to go through what's called a labor certification process, which takes about a year to complete, and that's through the U.S. Department of Labor. But they are on a pathway towards full citizenship.
Representative Davis. One more question. Can they just keep getting the exclusion without becoming citizens to remain in the United States?
I can't say that I've ever seen that. Generally, the intent is once you get a J-1 visa waiver that you do proceed towards full citizenship. Whether that's an option or not, I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Hunhoff.
Just a question. Do we have history in the state on the foreign graduates that have been here? You've said some facilities have. As to have they been here long enough now over the 3 years? Are they still continuing in those communities, or have they relocated someplace else? Do you have any of that data?
Very good question. Unfortunately, we do not. Periodically, though, we do survey the physicians in the state. And one of the things that we're going to be doing when we have this J-1 visa waiver program in the state is tracking those physicians. So up to now, we don't really have that information, but we will in the future.
Representative Frost.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Is the 3-year limit, is that a federal guideline, or?
Yes, it is spelled out in federal regulation.
Thank you.
Representative Hunhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. One more question. Does the state have any liability in this process if you're, you know, facilitating this to occur so that the worst scenario, sometimes things can go very well on paper and everything, and then you get a physician in a community and then it's not quite the same. Does the state have any liability with that process?
Well, there are 40 other programs in other states, 40 states that are using this program, and we checked with them on that point, and none said that there was any liability, so that's what we're assuming. We've looked through the forms that are issued to us as part of this program through the U.S. Department of State, and as far as I can tell, there isn't anything in there that makes us liable in any way.
Representative Hunstead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I was just going to ask you a question about, apparently, as I read this, what we're trying to do is expedite a process that's already there. What are the holdups in the existing process, and why do we think that we can help that?
As I think Kevin mentioned, the applications currently go to an interested government, federal government agency, which is the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and there's only one person that does this nationwide. So what happens generally is that when a community wants to go through that process and submits all of its forms in a packet, they go to the U.S. Department of Agriculture to this one person, and it goes to the bottom of the stack. And so there's the problem, is that it's very time-consuming, and it may take many, many months for that person to get to that particular application for a South Dakota community. And what happens is generally there's a lot of frustration involved with the wait. No one knows what's going on. They get involved with congressional folks and try to speed up the process. We think with a state program, we can cut down that month-long application wait process with the USDA to a matter of weeks.
Follow up. What will this cost us to do this?
We haven't really cost that out. We do know that many states charge fees for the process, and it will take staff time. That's the major thing that will incur. And within our office, we think with our state recruiter position and with our primary care position, we have two positions that are kind of involved in this area anyway, and we do work with those communities, have worked with them in the past in this program, just in kind of an unofficial capacity. that we have the staff expertise to take that on, existing staff expertise. But it will take some time and of expense, and that's why we want to use rules and charge a fee for those activities.
Representative Sola.
This is for Kevin, really. In your presentation, you mentioned 7 years. Now, refresh my memory as to what does that 7-year figure trigger?
Well, initially, when they apply to come into the U.S. to continue their foreign medical or their to continue their medical education in the U.S., that initial visa that's granted to them, that J-1 visa, is for it's a temporary visa for up to 7 years, and then beyond that 7 years that's the time when they're required to return home or apply for this waiver, and that's what we're talking about.
Representative Davis.
Kevin, if we go through the process within our state, do we then totally skip the federal person, or we are the people who do make the visa possible?
Basically, right now, excellent question, Representative Davis. Basically, right now, all of that information is gathered from the physician applying, the community, the provider, hospital or clinic, and it's sent into USDA. And they're the ones that actually review the application, and that's what we're proposing to take over or to do is the part that USDA does. Either way, then, whether USDA does that or we do it, we then send forward that application with the recommendation. And let's just assume that it's that physician and community have met all the criteria. Then we forward that packet with the recommendation for a J-1 visa waiver to the State Department and the U.S. Immigration. And then they're the ones that basically would have to grant the actual waiver because they're the ones that issued that visa.
Follow up, please.
Yes, Representative Davis.
And once you process it and go to the Department of Immigration, mm-hmm. that step is not a long step?
No, that's relatively quick. Yes. The other thing that I wanted to mention, and Bernie explained, I think, to the representative's question about why we think we can do this faster, I think there's two parts to that. One is there's clearly just a time delay because of the fact that it's on the bottom of the pile, and there's other states competing for that time of that individual. But secondly, what we found out from actual facilities participating in this process is all applications are not necessarily complete initially. And so let's say after 2 months you get the application and then they don't understand the situation here, whether it be Philip or, you know, the remoteness, the timeliness of the issue, the fact that I know in Martin they had a J-1 visa physician that had several sites in mind. And they had just had a physician that had left, another one that was planning to leave. I think Philip also said that. And so they have no reason to kind of move something through a lot quicker because they just don't know our situation. And so you could imagine if there's forms that need to be updated or completed in a matter of just a few minutes or a fax or a phone call to Philip or Martin, we can get things taken care of.
Representative McCoy.
Yes, Kevin, thank you. Are the feds receptive to this? Or were they going to fight us on this?
No, there's 40 other states that currently do this. And actually, we were encouraged by three sources to do this. One would be the rural communities out there just to help expedite this. Second was our congressional folks as we've made contact with them over the last year to try to expedite applications. And third was by the federal agency. They're actually, I think, promoting this as well.
Are there any other questions for the proponents? Kevin, I wonder, there was one of the letters, I think you have it back. Was it from Bennett County? Do you have?
Yes.
And maybe for those people, again, since we are on the Internet, maybe just summarize a couple of points. I think if you might just even read a couple of those from the actual
sure.
clinic as to why they support this legislation.
That's fine. The letter from Bennett County, which is in Martin, South Dakota, is from the Administrator Jack Jacobson. It's rather short, so I can probably just read this. It says, Dear Kevin, I am pleased to offer my support for House Bill 1018 regarding J-1 visa physicians practicing medicine in South Dakota. The current federal regulations for bringing J-1 visas to the South Dakota are very restrictive, time-consuming, and expensive. Had it not been for the direct interaction of our federal legislative delegation, Martin would have been without the services of a physician for several months during year 2000. It would certainly be to the advantage of rural and frontier designated health facilities if the South Dakota Department of Health had statutory authority to bring J-1 visa physicians into our state. We also have a supporting letter from David Dick, who's the administrator in Philip, and that letter says about the same thing. I think the only difference is they had a scenario where they had several physicians on board, and all of a sudden, because of one retiring and an illness, unexpected illness on another, they were very much looking at you know, a community that has a rather thriving hospital without any physician or doctor care, and were in desperate, dire straits, and the delay didn't help any. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? If not, if we could hear from the opponents of House Bill 1018. Are there any opponents? Seeing none, the chair closes the public hearing and opens the discussion for committee discussion and or action. Representative Davis.
I move do pass.
It has been moved by Representative Davis. Do pass House Bill 1018, seconded by Representative Abdullah. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the secretary will call the roll. All those in favor, say aye. Opposed, nay.
Abdullah?
Aye.
Radford?
Aye.
Davis?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Hunstad?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
McCoy?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Van Etten?
Aye.
Van Gerpen?
Aye.
Solem?
Aye.
Heinemann?
Aye.
13.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davis.
I move consent.
Second. Just a comment on this consent calendar. When you do have a unanimous vote, someone can move consent, which means it will go to the top of the order at the House and will not be open for debate on the House. We'll just take it as a consent item unless someone in the House takes it off and would like to discuss it. So at this point, we will vote on that consent. And it was moved by Representative Davis. It was seconded by Representative Nesselhoff. For the consent, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion has passed, and it will go to the consent calendar.